we're holding on some Chazayin Amud Bey's five lines from the bottom. We just started discussing yesterday the case of Mashkanta, where a person borrows money and uses his field as collateral for the loan. And we said there were various possible arrangements. You have ones that are considered outright ribis, where the other guy is going to be, where Malveh is going to be eating the payrus the whole time and not deducting anything from the loan. Then we had the opposite is something which is definitely mutter, which is where we say that after a certain number of years, the loan is going to be considered paid off regardless. And then we had in between, we had various other cases that may or may not be mutter according to different opinions. We talked about kitsusa, where we said there's a couple of possibilities what that means. First, we said that it meant for the first 5 years, let's say, of a 10-year loan, he's not going to be deducting anything from the loan, and then the last 5 years he's going to be giving the loiva all the payers. So then we said that can be maybe considered like an oris arrangement, and therefore doesn't have the appearance of ribis, and it would be fine. But we said maybe not. Or we said another possibility of kitsusa would be where he says that the first 5 years he will deduct a fixed amount per year, and the rest of the years he's going to figure out the actual amount of the produce. Anyway, there were those were two different types of kitsusa. Then we also had something called nachyosa, which is that he deducts from the loan a fixed amount per year. Now, the thing with that is that there may be a lot more crops per year than they expected. So therefore, there are concerns of ribis. We said it is in principle mutter. However, Talmud Chacham should not avail himself of that so as not to mislead people into thinking that ribis is mutter. So now the Gemara says, Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, Loi Achli B'nach Yosser. Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, and Rav Ashi, if they had something like that, where they had lent somebody money and the other guy used his field as a mashkanta, etc., they would not do this nachyosa thing because they're concerned about ribis. Now we did talk about yesterday. The Rambam brings from Halachas Gedolos, and he mentions various opinions of Rishonim that maybe in fact that kind of thing nachyosa is not just osur for Talmud Chacham. Maybe that it's actually outright osur. And in fact, the Rif holds that at the top of the Omud, at the top of Samach Zayin Omud Beis, Rava had said that it is mutter. However, a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do that. The Rif learns that actually they're arguing with Rava and saying that it is outright also. It's not just a matter of a Talmud Chacham. Nobody should do it, and therefore they wouldn't do that. So the only way they would do is a Mashkanta Desura, which we said was the kind where we say that after a certain number of years, regardless whether there were crops or not, then the loan is going to be considered paid off. On the other hand, Ravina ochel b'nachyosa, Ravina would eat based on nachyosa, so he held that it's mutter. Now, what about, though, the fact is, even if we say it's mutter, we said that Rava had said that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do that. So Toisva says that Ravina didn't want to consider himself a Talmud Chacham. But then he says that, so now what that means is a big question in itself. He doesn't consider himself a Talmud Chacham still. I mean, other people certainly consider him one. The Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eger, actually refers to something over here that the Elia Rabbah discusses on this in the Halachas of Tisha B'Av. You have in principle a person is allowed to do Malacha on Tisha B'Av, but a Talmud Chacham should be Machmer and not. And in Shulchan Aruch it says that really a person should consider himself as a Talmud Chacham in that regard and not do Malacha on Tisha B'Av. So we see that a person should consider himself like a Talmud Chacham where it's going to cause him a loss or something. So the Elia Rabbah discusses over there that maybe we're only talking about when we're talking physical tsar. But here we're talking about something that causes physical tsar. Here we're talking about gaining in money. And then there are other possibilities as well. The Elia Rabbah points out that Amam holds that you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to give yourself the appearance of a Talmud Chacham, even when it's a chumrah on yourself. So maybe Tosfos holds like that. With all that said, Tosfos brings a different girsa that it's not that Ravina would use nachyosa, but rather he would use kitsusa. And we said before we had a machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina whether kitsusa is mutter, and very well then Ravina holds like his own shita that it's mutter. So the Gemara says, Omar Mazutra, my time and demand of Ochum and Nachyosa. Why does the opinion that says that you can use Nachyosa, why does he hold that such a thing is valid? Where again, we're saying we're going to deduct a fixed amount from the loan per year, regardless of how much the actual crops are. Because he says, Midi to have Yasdei Achuza. Because you can compare it to the case where the Torah says where a person is Makdish, has Sdei Achuza, a field that he inherited from his ancestors in Eretz Yisrael, and he donates it to Hekdish. So the Torah tells us that if he wants to buy it back before Yovel, then he has to pay Hekdish one seller and one punyan per. When it's a Sdei Achuza, what we do is we figure out the area of the field. We don't care about the quality of the field. We just go according to the area. Every base core, every area where you can plant a core of grain, which is defined in halacha as 75,000 square amos. If it was a square, it would be about 270 some amos. The Torah tells us right after Yovel, that's worth 50 sloyim, and then afterwards it gets prorated per year at the rate of one sela and one punyan per year. Punyan is 148 for the sela. So say for example you were makdish it, and then now it's for example 10 years before Yovel, and you want to buy it back, you're paying hektish 10 sloim and 10 punyonis. If you're the owner, you're also adding the chomish. That's another matter. But anyway, the point is that with Sdei Achuza, you're paying according to the number of years per yovel at a fixed rate. Now, Sdei Achuza, lav apagavza ka'ochel peiru tuva. Now consider all that time that when it comes to a Sdei Achuza, a hektish is getting lots and lots of peiris from this field every year until you buy it back. And yes, Omer Rachmana Kaporik La Ba'abo Zuzi, and yet the Torah says that you can be koder for four zuz, with a sela, no, sela in other words, four zuz equals one sela, so a sela plus a punyan, which okay, a punyan is a smallish coin, so the Gemara is not considering that. So you're paying hektish one sela, which is four zuz, plus one punyan for every year's payris. Now some years there may be enormous amounts of payris, and some years there may be very little. Nevertheless, it's still allowed, and we're not worried about Rivis. Hachanami, lo shna, well, therefore, says Mazutra, it's no different over here, so therefore, it is allowed. As long as you're deducting something, that it doesn't even have to be that you're figuring out the average amount of payers per year, as long as every time there is a suffix, after all, whether there's going to be payers or not, so therefore it should be allowed, and there's no problem. There's no problem of ribs. So we see that to buy all the payers for a year for a small amount is not a problem of ribis. In fact, the Chidushim HaMiyuchasim LaRitva and the Nemuka Yosef point out that in fact we see that the whole concept of a mashkanta even is mutter, because we see in effect that's what you're doing. It's like a mashkanta to hektesh, and you're deducting a sela and punyan per year, and it's allowed. Umanda Osa, whereas the opinions that say that it's also, now again, we said according to Rava, a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do it. That doesn't mean it's also, it just means that Talmud Chacham has to be more careful not to give the appearance of doing something wrong. But we said that Rav Kahana and Rav Papa and Rav Ashi said that it's also, and they held it outright, meaning it's outright also, it's not even a matter of a Talmud Chacham or not. Why? Because they say, what's the difference? Omalach, they're going to tell you, the difference is Sdei Achuza Hekdeshi. Because the Sdei Achuza, we're dealing with Hekdesh. Rachmona Ikmei Apidyon. So the Torah tells us that you can establish it based on Pidyon. The Torah is telling you that you can redeem it at such and such a rate per year. And after all, we've learned before that B'dievet, even your Mechalel Hekdesh, even Mea money, even 100 manas worth on a Shavah Prutah, then fine. B'dievet, it's okay. So here, the Torah is to begin with telling you that you can redeem it for less than the value. But here we're dealing with a halva. There you're not talking about, you're not lending hektish money. Here you're talking about you're lending money and mechzik ribis, and therefore it has the appearance of ribis, and therefore according to those opinions you shouldn't do it. Okay. More on the topic of mashkanta. The Gemara says, Omer Rav Ashi, Omerli Sovid Masa Machasya. The elder Talmid Chacham of Masa Machasya told me, my mashkanta, why do we call this arrangement a mashkanta? Omer Rav Ashi, Omerli Sovid Masa Machasya, Sam Mashkanta Shata. A mashkanta, unless otherwise specified, is for a year. Now Rashi says, we're talking about over here, we learned yesterday when it comes to a mashkanta, we have asra de masalki and asra de loy masalki. We said we have places where even during the term of the mashkanta, at any time the loiva can pay off the loan and say, now I want my field back. Or you have asra de loy masalki. We have places where we have places where you can't do that, where the malva can say, as long as the term of the loan is still outstanding, the loan was supposed to be for 10 years, until the term is up, I'm not required to return the field, and I'm not required to accept payment from you. As we discussed yesterday, not always can a loiva require a malva to accept payment where it's not in his financial interest to. So now when we say stam mashkanta shata, a stam mashkanta is a year. So Rashi learns that we're talking about even in a place, even in Astra de Masalki, the minimum is 1 year. On the other hand, the Ritva says the other way around, that it means in an Astra de Masalki, you can always remove him. What we're saying is in an Astra de Loy Masalki, if we don't specify how long it lasts, then it's for 1 year. Anyway, so what's the relevance? So the Gemara says, "Amai naftamina." What's the practical outcome of that? The iocha lo shata. If the malva had eaten the peiros, so they had the field and eaten the peiros for at least 1 year, motzi masalik lei, then the loiva is able to remove him by paying off the loan. The iloi, and if not, loi motzi masalik lei, then he can't do that. Even, according to Rashi, even in a place where Asra de Masalki, you have to give him at least a year. According to the Ritva, the other way around, we're saying that in Asra de Masalki, you can do it any time. We mean in Asra de Masalki, and they didn't specify how long it's going to be. The Omer of Ashi, and Ravashi says another thing, Omer of Isova de Masa Machasya, another thing the elder of Taman Chacham, the Masa Machasya, told me. Masa Machasya, by the way, was Ravashi's native city, and it's where he had his yeshiva. In his times, the yeshiva of Sura was located in Masa Machasya, which some Rishonim learn that Masa Machasya is actually another name for Sura. Others say, and it seems from a Gemara in Beitza, that it's so, that more precisely, Masa Machasya is a suburb of Sura. The Zohar actually tells a whole story that the place used to be called Kfar Tarsha, and one time they had a terrible epidemic over there, and a few of the Chachamim came there to help them out. And they did, and afterwards they got them to improve their ways and do tshuva, and then in token of that, they renamed the city Masa Machasya, which means the protected city, because now that they're going to act the way the Chachamim are teaching them to act, then it'll be protected from such disasters in the future. Anyway, so now Rav Ashi is saying, the elder of Talmud Chachamim of here, where I grew up and where I'm the Rosh Hashiva, have told me these halachas. So they told me, my mashkanta. Why do we call this arrangement mashkanta de shchuna gabe? Because he's considered a neighbor of the field. There's no closer neighbor. Lamai naftamina. What is that relevant for? The din of bar mitzra. It's relevant as far as the din of bar mitzra. We're going to learn in great detail later on in the masechta and in the ninth parak. We're going to talk about the dinim of bar mitzra. The din is, in brief, that if you're selling a field, the closest neighbors have first right to buy that field. And if somebody else goes and buys it instead, the idea being that way it benefits them, because then they have one big field rather than having different fields scattered in different places. So it's beneficial for them. It's called Vosisa Yoshavatoi. So now, what happens is if somebody else goes and buys it, then now you have, let's say, Reuven is selling his field. Shimon owns the neighboring field. Now, instead, Reuven went and sold it to Levi. So we're going to talk about there the dinim that Shimon is entitled to go to Levi and reimburse him the amount of the field and take it himself. And Levi can't object, because he can say, listen, you could always take the same money and buy a field someplace else. So we're going to learn the dinim about it in great detail later in the Masechta on Daf Kuf Ches, Bez Hashem. And in any case, you were saying the holder of the mashkanta is considered like the neighbor. Um, so, um, So therefore, the mayan nafkamin are din of the bar mitzvah. So it's relevant as far as the din of a bar mitzvah. So Rashi explains, in other words, that now, if later on the loiva wants to sell it, then the other bnei hametzah, the other neighbors don't have rights over it. Only the malva does. If the malva doesn't want to buy it, then they're the next closest bar mitzvah. But if the malva wants to buy it, then he has first rights over it. That's according to Rashi. There are in fact different Rishonim who disagree. And first of all, does this apply only by Asra de Masalki or Asra de Loi Masalki? Does it apply where at any time the loiva could remove him by paying off the debt? So you have a machlokas within that, but also in addition, the Ramban learns actually that no, he's not considered a bar mitzvah in the sense that the owner of the field can't sell it to whoever was. To whoever he wants. No, all it is that if the owner of the field sells it to the malva, then the other balei mitzvah can't prevent him. So in other words, it doesn't mean that. So according to the Ramban, it wouldn't mean if Reuven, the owner of the field, does want to sell it to Levi, somebody else who's one of the bnei metzra, then Shimon, the holder of the mashkanta, according to the Ramban, couldn't object to that. Now Rashi says he could. He could say I'm the closest bnei metzra. According to the Ramban, he can't. All it is that the other way around. If he wants to sell it to Reuven, if he wants to sell it to Shimon, then Levi, one of the other bnei metzra, can object. And in fact, you have in Shulchan Aruch the Mechaber holds like the Ramban and the Ramah brings the opinion of Rashi and the Rosh. Okay. So the Gemara says, here's some summaries of halachas that we had so far. Amar Rabba, less hilchsa loike taushi papunoi. The halacha is not like the tausha of Rav Papa that we learned before. We said a tausha was an arrangement where you're saying you're selling goods with the deal that the person is going to pay later on. You're selling them on credit, and he's going to pay a higher price later on according to what the going price is of the thing at the time. We have the example over there where the Papa said that he sells beer in Tishrei, and he charges the Nissan price, where in Nissan it's going to be higher, with the deal that they're only going to pay until Nissan. And Papa had pointed out why that's not an issue of Rivis, because he doesn't need to sell the beer Davke in Tishrei. He could just as well have waited until Nissan. It's not like he needs the money. Nevertheless, we're saying, Rava is saying the halacha is not like that. The halacha is also not like the shtoris of mechuzah, which we're going to explain in a second. You can't, in fact, so they do these kinds of things in mechuzah, but the halacha is you can't actually do this. And you also can't do a rental of a field of the kind that they do in Neresh. Again, we're going to see in the Gemara soon what that is. Chachira, we're going to deal with in detail later in the Masechta. Chachira is basically you're renting your field to somebody, and he's paying you a fixed amount of the crops per year. An oris arrangement is where he's working the field for you, and he's paying you a percentage of the crops every year. So he's a sharecropper. He's almost like, in that sense, a part owner, because he's entitled to a certain percentage of the proceeds. A choicher is more like a regular renter. He's paying you a certain amount in rent, in crops for rent per year, regardless of how much the field produces. So now, in Neresh, they had a certain arrangement like that, which Rav is saying infringes on the dinim of Ribis, and then you can't do that. So, what do we mean, Ketaushi Papunoi? We mean Ketaushi de Rapapa. We mean like the Tausha of Rapapa that we learned about the other day. So Rapapa had held that when he sells his beer, where they're going to pay him later on in Nissan, they're going to pay him the Nissan prices. So Rav Papa had said it's not Ribis, but the halacha is not like Rav Papa, and therefore you can't make such an arrangement, because we said over there that Rav Papa himself said, from my point of view, it's not Ribis because I don't need the money now. But on the other hand, the Gemara had pointed out over there that the fact is, we could say from the point of view of the other people, it's Ribis because they're giving you something extra for the fact that you're not getting we said over there, Rav Sheshes Breidur of Idi said to the Papa that if you look at it from their point of view, then they're giving you something extra for the fact that you're waiting to get paid, so you may not need the money, but from their point of view, it's still Ribis. And so therefore, the halacha follows that for that point. Next, what do you mean shtari mechuznoi? What do you mean the shtaris of mechuza? What they would do in mechuza is, so people in mechuza were merchants. The whole city was a commercial city. People would buy and sell there all the time. So what they would do is, So people are buying merchandise. They're giving it and they're making an iska. We're going to start discussing an iska in the next Mishnah. An iska is basically where you're investing money with somebody and he's managing the money and managing the business. So they would be buying merchandise. They would arrange with merchants there or in other places that they're going to sell it and they're going to split the profits. So they're going to figure out how much profit do we expect. And then what we do is we write out one shtar that says that Pliny owes Pliny X amount, where the X amount includes the original amount that he invested plus the expected profits. So say he gave the guy $100 worth of merchandise. So right off the bat, the guy owes him $100. So now they would say, we expect that you're going to make $20 profit on selling this. Therefore, we're going to write a shtar in the first place they include the profit together with the keren, the kasvile b'shtara. They write the whole thing in a shtar. So they would write that you the storekeeper who are going to be selling this merchandise owe me, the investor, $120. So you can't do that. The problem is, who says that in fact there's going to be profit? What if it turns out there's no profit? So then it comes out that you have a shtar written that he owes him $120, where he originally invested with him $100. And that's no good. So in fact, there are actually two different points over here that are also. One is that, and then this is how it's brought in. This is how it's brought in halacha. Number one, you can't do like what they did to say that he owes 120, where it was an initial investment of 100. And the second one is that when you're writing a shtar for an iska, don't write it as a loan. Because an iska has to a certain extent in halacha the status of a loan, but don't write it as one. Make it clear in the document that it is an iska, that it is an investment. Which the implications of that are, it means among other things that later on we're going to talk about what happens with an iska and in what ways it's different than a loan. So you have to be careful not to do that because then if you're treating it exactly as a loan, then it's going to have different, then it's going to have, so the Rambam points out the problem is that if you write it as a loan, what if the guy dies and the Yodish has the document? He's not going to realize that it wasn't truly a loan, but rather that it was something else, and he may end up collecting ribis with it where he shouldn't. However, Mar Bar Amema says to Rav Ashi, it's not so simple to say that it's also Abba Oven Ami. My father Amema does that. He writes shtaris like that. And he also lekameh. The difference is, how does he do in order to avoid the issue of ribis when they come to him mehem and lahu? If they tell him there was no profit, then he believes them, and therefore, so what's the concern? We're writing over here in the shtar that he invested 100, and we're including the expected profit with it. So now we have, in other words, we write a shtar saying he owes 120. But Amema knows that of that, 20 is the expected profit. And if the guy comes and tells him that there was no profit at all, then Amema says, then good, then pay only 100. Now, why would he write the shtar in that way? The Shittim Kovetzis brings from the David that way, If he sees that the loiver is going to lie, and Amema can realize, however it is, with her body language or whatever, that the guy's lying, then he can threaten him. You know what? Listen, I have a shtar here that says you owe 120, and you're going to have no way of proving otherwise. So you may as well tell the truth, and that way you won't get in trouble. So you would do that. So it seems that there's no problem, says Ma'abar Amema. Omalei, but Abashi says, that works out well enough when he himself is alive. Ish Shochev, but like we just said from the Rambam, Ish Shochev v'Nochel Shtara Kama Yasmi, what would happen if a Meimah were to pass away and the Shtar ends up in the hands of the Yisoyimim, and for example, you know what's going on over here, but let's say his other children, or somebody else who does this, whose children might not know, what's going to happen? They're not going to know that 20 of what's written in the Shtar is in fact the expected profit. They're going to think it's the whole thing, and they're going to collect. They're going to collect the extra 20, and they're going to be collecting ribs. The Gemara says, "Habekishgoga sheyotze melifnei hashalit." That Rav Ashi expressed himself in that way. What if he passes away? This was an example of what the pasuk calls a mistake that comes from the ruler. Meaning, the Talmud Chachamim are called rulers, Talmud Chachamim are called kings, and when a Talmud Chacham says something, even if inadvertently, it has an effect. So here, Rav Ashi should have been more careful with his lashon, and instead he used this expression: "What if Hameimah were to pass away?" And sure enough, Benoch Nafshid Hameimah, and sure enough, Hameimah passed away not long after that. So we see that though, a Talmud Chacham has to be extra careful with his words because his words have tremendous effect. L'mayim. In any case, we said the halacha is not like that, so you're not allowed to do such a thing. Even though we said on the face of it, you could avoid the issue of ribis, but your yoshim may not, and therefore such a thing is also the way they did it in Bechosa. Okay, then we said a third thing that Rava had said, the halacha is not like chachmirei nafshoi. You're not allowed to do a rental of the kind they did in Meresh, which is the name of a city in Babel. So what does that mean? So Balabatim would lend money to poor people using the field as collateral, and then they would have they're going to rent the field from the so now what would happen is they would be renting the field to the poor person for such and such for X number of korim per year. So they'd say, you Reuven have borrowed money from me, so now you're using your field as collateral. Fine, I'm renting you this field, and you're going to pay me X amount per year. So de kasvi hachi, they write in their documents as follows: Mishkan le Ploini Ara le Planya. Ploini, Reuven has mortgaged his field to Ploini, to Shimon, who lent him money. Behodor chochramine, and now he rented it from him. The reason it's also Amos Kna, because when did the Malva acquire the field in the first place? The Aknia Niale, that now he can be Machneh, that now he can be renting it out again. The fact is, it's only a Mashkante. He doesn't actually own the field yet. So it seems like Ribis Tzutza. He's not doing any Tircha in it. And the fact is, it's a Chachira, which means it's not even a matter of percentages that if the field has a bad year, then he's not going to be getting anything. It's a Chachira, which means that regardless, unless there are certain extreme events that we're going to learn about in the ninth parak, then always he's entitled to his X number of Kurim per year. So now, therefore, this seems like real Ribis. Now Rashi uses the expression, it would be ribis ktsutza. It would be actual ribis daraisa. The Rosh says that maybe it's not actually, even Rashi might not hold, it's not ribis ktsutza. It's at least just Rashi is just using that as a stronger expression, but meaning, in other words, it would be looking like ribis, it would be avak. Although the Rashba says that maybe Rashi would indeed hold that it is Ribis Gemura, because it seems, it makes it look like when he first borrowed the money that was the arrangement, that he's going to do that, and therefore that is classic Ribis Tzutza, because it was arranged at the time of the law. Anyway, so therefore such a thing is also, says Your Honor. But the Gemara says, Idna de Kakasvi Hachi, the fact is, But we have like this later on, as a result, the Pashtus, as a result of what Rava said. So later on, the people of Neresh, they still wanted to make this kind of arrangement, but they needed to alter it in order to avoid the issues of Rivis. So to Kakasvi Hochi, so now they write as follows. They write in the document, we did buy the field from him. The Malva is saying, I bought the field from the Loiva. Vishahina Kama Idni. And it's been by me for quite some time, which means 3 years. So I already have chazok on it. And already I've been having payrus in it, benachyosa. I've been having this nachyosa arrangement that we said before, that we deduct a certain amount from the loan per year. V'hodur chachra, and only that are we doing the chachira, only then are we renting it back out to the lawyer. So now, in that case, so now it was already by him for 3 years. So now it nobody is going to think that there was a loan. There was a loan over here. Nobody's going to think that it was arranged at the time of the loan or anything like that. It seems more obvious that he had already for 3 years. So therefore, at this point, it's considered his. So now there's no difference whether he continues to work it himself or whether he rents it out, and even if he rents it back to the lender. And the reason is, to the borrower, that is, now the fact is, we do want, we will find all over Shas, that the Chachamim make takonis in order not to lock the door in front of Leuven. In other words, we do want to give lenders, potential lenders, an incentive to lend people money. So therefore, we're going to do it that way. And we're going to allow such a thing. Because at least now they've taken away the obvious possibility of this. However, the Gemara says still, v'lav milsehi, still that's not so. Even so, even when you keep it by you for 3 years, it's still a problem of ribis, because when you have in the next Mishnah that we're going to have later on, you can have a case where you have, if he himself is eating the payrus, then that's fine. Sometimes there may not be payrus 1 year, so therefore that's fine. Then you have these various cases of mashkantas that we discussed before. But here, it's a chachira. The loiva is required to give him X number of bushels of grain or whatever it is per year, and if the field doesn't produce, he's going to have to actually go and buy himself and bring it to the loiva, to the malva, so therefore it has much more the appearance of ribis, or maybe even it may be ribis tzutza, and therefore such a thing would be also. So even this altered method that the people of Neresh are doing is still not working, even though loitino delos bifne loivin, but ribis is still a consideration. Okay. So now we're going to deal with the matter of iska that we touched on before. So you can have, you have a shutfus, which is a partnership. Two people pull together, their two or more people pull together their money, and they open a business in partnership, and they split the profits and the loss. Now you have something else called an iska, which is where you arrange with somebody else. I'm investing the money. We're going to have in the Mishnah also examples where I'm giving you an animal to raise. You're going to take responsibility for anything that happens, and later on if there's profit, then we're going to split it. Now the problem is again, we don't know for sure that there's going to be a profit, and on the other hand, we're telling him that you have to bear all the losses. So you have a problem of ribis over here. Rashi refers to later in the Masechta, the Gemara explains that when you do an iska like this, half the money is considered a milva and half of it is considered a pikadon, because the reason is exactly that. When you're saying we're going to split the profits, in effect, what we're saying is, so here I'm giving you $100 worth of merchandise. So we're saying that when there's a profit, then we'll split it 50-50. Therefore, he's willing to accept full achrayus for half the keren, for 50 out of 100, that no matter what happens, even if there's an onus, we're going to consider that like a loan. After all, when you borrow money, you're going to pay back the money, regardless what kind of onus there was. The other half, he becomes a shomer over. And we say a shomer is potter from certain kinds of things. He's potter from onsin or whatever. So in effect, you have half milva and half pikadon. Now what happens is, though, he's managing the whole thing as a benefit for the fact that the other guy lent him money, and therefore we have a problem of ribis. So now we have to deal with how we make an iska without having the issue of ribis. So the whole concept of heter iska is based on that we transform a loan into an iska, and then we do the various things that we're going to learn in this Mishnah and in this Sugya about how you structure an iska to avoid issues of ribis. So the Mishnah says, the Mishnah says, you can't set up that a storekeeper, that you're going to give payrus to a storekeeper as an iska, and the idea is you're going to tell him, for example, that, look, payrus are currently going, this kind of payrus are currently selling at 4 sa for the seller. So if you buy them in bulk, then you're paying only a seller. Meanwhile, you're selling a little bit of payrus at a time. So therefore, so you're going to gain the profits, and so you're going to sit and then sell them, and we're going to split the profits. So again, the problem is Ribis, because the problem is that you're in effect lending him some money, and he's now going and running the business and giving you profits, and therefore he's doing something for you as a benefit for the fact that you lent him money. Or similarly, you can't give money to somebody else as an iska, where he's going to buy the payers and they're going to split the profits. Same problem. Unless he pays the guy as a worker, as we're going to see in the Gemara what that means exactly. So once you're paying him as a worker, in other words, then he's not running the business for your benefit. Then he's running the business in order to get his pay, and therefore that's more. Similarly, continues the Mishnah, you can't have chickens sit and incubate eggs where the idea is where there's going to be machta schar, where again, they're going to split the profits. What we're going to do is, in other words, Rashi describes, we're going to figure out how much are the eggs worth currently. Then we're going to have, he's going to give the chickens to somebody else. He's going to give the eggs to somebody else who has a chicken who's going to incubate them. So we're going to figure out how much more the chicks that hatch from these eggs, how much are they going to be worth? More than the eggs, and they're going to split the profits. Now again, you have the other guys is accepting achrayus for the eggs. What happens if the eggs get ruined? What happens if the chicks die? So therefore you have the same problem of iska. Similarly, you can't figure out as far as calves and as far as colts, horse or donkey babies, same thing, where you're going to figure out the current value now, you're going to say the same thing. I have a calf now, which is worth, I have a newborn calf now, which is worth $10. You are going to raise it for me for the next 2 years or so until it becomes a mature animal and is ready for work. At the end of that, we're going to figure at that point the animal is going to be worth $100, and therefore we have $90 profit, and we're going to split that profit 45 apiece. So again, unless he pays him for his work, and he pays him for the food that he gives the animals. So now in the previous case, Tosfos points out, in the case of a storekeeper, you're paying him kapoyo because he's sitting there all day and working in the store. On the other hand, here, when it comes to an animal, he's not working with the animal all the time. It doesn't take that long to give the animal to eat and drink. So you don't have to give him for a whole day's work, but you have to give him schar amoloi. You have to give him for what he's working, and you have to give him schar mezonoi, the amount that he's spending on food for the animals. And then that avoids the issue of ribs. Or megadlin oisan. Now, by the way, when this shepherd is accepting the animals and he's going to raise them until a certain point, what is that point? Until they reach one third of their expected full growth. Once at that point, then he gives it back to the original owner, and then at that point they split the profits. Because now at that point the animal is big enough to actually start doing work. So actually, when we say Ad Shiyum Mishaloshin, the Rambam actually learns Mishaloshin means until they're 3 years old, because the Rambam is explaining that we mean until they're ready for work. The Tosfos Yomtiv gives a different explanation. Mishaloshin means when they're one third of their expected growth. At this point, the owner may want to shech them and eat them. We're talking about cows, obviously. And then the meat of them is the tastiest. So that would be when he'd want to do that. So in any case, that's the point. In other words, when you're arranging this kind of thing, I own an animal, you're going to raise it for me. So he raises it until it's mishaloshin, one third its growth, according to Rashi, and 3 years old, according to the Rambam. B'chamur, as far as a donkey, ad shetei te'enes, then he has to continue raising it until it's old enough to be carrying a burden. So that was the usual arrangement. That was the usual arrangement of doing things before they figure out how much everything has been worth and split the profits. And again, we're saying you can't just split the profits straight, because then you have a problem of ribbis, so you have to pay the guy for his work and you have to pay him for the animal feed. So the Gemara says, first of all, when we said in the Mishnah that you pay the storekeeper in an iska, you pay him kapoil. So the Gemara says, tana, we learn in a braisa, kapoil bottle. You pay him like a worker who is like a worker who's bottle. So what does that mean? My kapoil bottle. What do you mean? A poil bottle would mean, in other words, that it sounds like it means that he's bottle. That how much would a person want to be paid to sit and not do work? But what do you mean? He's not sitting and doing nothing. The fact is, he has to run the store. He has to bring payers to the store. He has to measure them, etc. He's doing a lot of work in the store, so he's not bottle. So my kapoil bottle. And the answer is, Amar Abaye, to put a bottle, shall ois him alocha the bottle mina. It means, in other words, you pay him according to what you would have paid somebody who was doing a different kind of work. How much? So Rashi explains, it means, let's say he, for example, till now he was a carpenter or a blacksmith. Now, running a store is much easier. So therefore, so how much would he be willing to be paid to do that? Instead of doing the hard job from before, how much pay would he be willing to take in order to be a storekeeper, which is an easier job, and therefore, and that would be how much you pay him. So not bottle, but bottle for Oysa Malacha, because he previously was doing some other kind of work. Now Tosfos doesn't like that explanation for a number of different reasons, and Tosfos says it does mean bottle legamri. It does mean, in fact, that we mean if he's sitting completely, how much would a person be willing to how much of a pay cut would a person be willing to take to not have to work? So then you do that. So Tosfos discusses that we're going to have in the Gemara, we're going to have different opinions of Tanoim on the subject. So therefore, so this kapoil bottle would be specifically according to the mayor. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss other possibilities of what poil bottle means. And you have, in fact, there is quite a lot of discussion about this among the Achronim. The Marshal has a short statement over here explaining poil bottle, where he explains it. He understands it the way the Tur understands it, which is similar to Tosfos' second explanation. We see how much a person who has no job right now at all, so this is actually the third possibility. A person who right now is out of work, how much of a salary would he want to be doing this kind of work? So he explains it that way. And then you have the Marshal goes and explains, and so the Marshal finishes off. He says that this is according to the Tur and the Ran. Meanwhile, he says the Machaber, wants to say that it means that, has a different explanation of Kapoyo Bottle, that it means that how much he would want to take off time completely from work. And Marshal says that no, that's not really correct. And the Marshal has a very, very long explanation justifying what the Mechaber says. Maharam over there on the same page has an even longer discussion. So there's an enormous amount of discussion on this point of what exactly kapoil bottle means. Okay, in any case, the point is you're paying the chenveni like that, and therefore that removes the problem of ribius, because now he's not working for you because you lent him the money or because you lent him the merchandise, but because you're paying him for his time, you're paying him for his work. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah we had a few cases. We had the case of a storekeeper, and we had where you gave him money to buy the payers. So in the one case you give him the payers to sell, and in the other one you're telling him, here's the money, now you go buy payers and go restock your store. So the Gemara says, Utsricha, now we need to be told both of those cases. If the Mishnah had only talked about the storekeeper, meaning where you actually give him the payrus ready-made, you would say, Chenveni, who decided like a poil bottle, because you could say, by a Chenveni, in that case, that it's enough to pay him like a poil bottle. Mishumbloy, nofish tircha, because he doesn't have as much tircha. Because he has the payrus ready-made, he has to weigh them and sell them. It's true, fine, but he doesn't have as much work to do. Ava Morris Likach Ben Paris, but when you give him money to buy the Paris, the Nufish Tirche, there it's a lot of Tirche. aim a loy sagile, because poyo bottle. Maybe paying him like a poyo bottle was not enough, and you have to pay him the full salary of what you would pay somebody to do such work. Or according to Rashi, it would mean, in other words, that you're paying him as much as he would have for the heavier work that he was doing before, where now he took off from this work and is doing this work instead. And this is part of the reason, this is part of the problem that Tosfos had with Rashi's explanation, and why the various other Rishonim and Achronim have trouble with Rashi's explanation. And they say, and therefore they have different explanations of what it means. The Ritva explains to justify Rashi that what the Gemara means, in other words, is that after all, maybe there isn't as much noticeable difference between this work that he's doing now and what he was doing before. So maybe it's not noticeably easier. So the fact is, if he now pays him less, then it's going to look like he's getting away with paying him less because he lent him money. So you would think that therefore in that case, so you would have to maybe pay him the full amount. The eton of Mois Likach Ben Peres. On the other hand, if we only said that the case where you give him money to buy Peres, have him in a hospital to buy the poyo bottle, fine, fakert. In that case, you have to pay him like a poyo bottle, Mishum the Nafish Tircha, because he's going into a lot of Tircha to go and buy and sell. But when you give him the Peres ready made, the Lord Nafish Tircha, it's not as much of a Tircha. Ema Sagile Mashu Ba'alma. Maybe you don't even need to give him the poyo bottle. You just give him a nominal amount. You give him a symbolic payment, and that would be enough. And you could say that Fulu Loi Tovel Ima Elabitsir. And you could say, therefore, that maybe it would be enough, even if you invited him to dip his bread in your sauce. So we're going to discuss that in the Gemara soon. You have an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that says just that, that says, for example, so what you do is you say, I'm eating over here and I have a dipping sauce in front of me. Would you like to dip your bread in my sauce? And that would already be considered a payment. Or if he only ate with him one fig, zehu schore, then that could be considered to be his pay. That would be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that we're going to have in a braisa in a minute. So you would think in the Mishnah also that, again, when you're giving him the payrus, maybe that's enough. So therefore the Mishnah has to tell us in both cases that no, according to the Tana of the Mishnah, you do have to pay him kapoyo bottle, and otherwise you have a problem with this. So now let's talk more about this matter of how much you have to pay him, and this whole matter of Iska. So first, Kama Izi Vitana Golan Malin Simon. We have a simon over here for the next few things that the Gemara brings. Kama Izi Vitana Golan, these are key words from each of the following three dinim brises that the Gemara is going to bring. I've mentioned before the Sefer of Matzeach LeDavid from Rav David Pardo, where he finds each time there's one of these simonim in the Gemara, he tries to find a deeper meaning behind it. He says here, there's a Gemara elsewhere that says that Hashem, we know, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Pegeya B'Nefashos Tchila, when Hashem has to punish a person, he doesn't first start by harming his body, he starts by taking away the guy's property, and then if he doesn't do tshuva, then it goes from there. We have, for example, by Tzaras, where we see that first Tzaras hits a person's house, and if not, then if he doesn't do tshuva, then it's clothed, and only then him. So here, in a similar way, now the Gemara has an expression elsewhere that, for example, a person has a goat, then Hashem may make that the goat will die or something will happen with it, and that'll be a kapara for his averus. And the same thing, if he's even poorer, and all he can afford is a chicken, then Hashem will take away that asset from him. You have, for example, the famous story with, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Eliyahu Anovi, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is going with Eliyahu, and they stay by this very, by this couple who are great machnisei orchim, and then Eliyahu is davening that their cow should die, and later on he explains to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that there was a Xerim in Hashemayim that the woman in the house should die, and instead he's saying that the cow should die. So it made a financial hardship for them, but at least it saved her life. So here he says, in the same vein, the Gemara is hinting over here, Kama Izi V'Tana Golim Malin Simon, that it's also hinting at how great Hashem is, that he takes the Izi, the goat, or the Tana Goli, the chicken, rather than the person's life. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, when we're saying again that you have an iska with somebody, for example, a storekeeper, how much do you have to pay him? Ben meruba ben muat. So whether you give him a larger salary or a smaller amount, then it's mutter divrei a mayor. That's what the mayor says. So Rashi explains that that's the, that a meir means, in other words, you can give him however, Reb Meir is saying you have to have some amount, you have to arrange some kind of salary. So if the guy is willing to accept a lesser salary, then fine, he's willing to accept it. According to Tosfos, what it means is, no, Reb Meir is saying, like you said in the Mishnah, kapoyo bottle, it means, in other words, whether originally he was doing a harder job or an easier job or whatever, either way, but it would have to be done kapoyo bottle, according to the Meir. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm after the like tovel imay el betzir. Rabbi Yehuda said, like we just said, even if he only dipped in sauce with him, so the balabas is saying, I'm eating, and here's some sauce to dip your bread in. Or you only ate with him one fig. Zehu schare, that's enough for it to be considered his schar, and therefore that avoids the problem of ritz. Reb Shimon ben Yochai, Omer Reb Shimon. So now Rabbi Yehuda obviously is more mekel than Reb Meir. Rashi points out. On the other hand, Reb Shimon ben Yochai. On the other hand, Reb Shimon ben Yochayim and Noisim leischarim mishalim. Reb Shimon is machmir more than any of them. He says you have to pay the guy a full salary. Not even you have to pay him the full amount. So what it is like this. According to Rashi, Reb Meir is not saying kapoya botar. Reb Meir is saying you have to agree with him on something that's going to be called a salary. It can be a little amount, but it can be. Reb Shimon then would be saying what it says in the Mishnah, that it has to be kapoya botar. According to other Rishonim, according to Tosfos and other Rishonim, it's the other way around. Reb Meir is the Tana of our Mishnah and says kapoya botar, and Reb Shimon is even more machmir and saying that you have to, and Reb Shimon would be machmir even more so and say that you have to pay him a full salary, not just kapoya botar. Okay, that's the first din. The second din, the second braisa, Tanan Rabbanan, Ein Shomin Loyasa Izim Veloyasa Rechelim, when it comes to the Shuma, where we discussed in the second half of the Mishnah, we said that you own an animal and you're going to give it to a shepherd to raise, and then eventually once the animal grows to a certain size, you're going to split the increase. So you can't do a Shuma like that, you can't do an evaluation like that. On as loyos izim on goats loyos rechelim or on sheep v'loy kol davar she'ena oisav oichol or anything else that doesn't actually work but yet it eats lamechta where you're going to then split the profits because again then you have the problem of ribs when you have an animal that works for its keep, then fine, you can say you're gaining from the fact that during that time you can work with the animal, so therefore there's no problem of ribis. But where it's just the animal is only eating and is only consuming and not producing, then you have an issue of ribis, so therefore you can't arrange that the profits are going to be half and half. Unless you pay him schar amoler or mezoino, unless you pay him for his work and for the food, like we said in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yosi says no, you could do that with goats. It's true that goats don't work for a living, but they do give milk, and the guy can keep the milk, so therefore that'll serve as schar amoler or mezoino. V'aser achelim, and same thing with the sheep. Because you shear them, you have the wool that you shear from them, the shotvos, and you also have, when they walk through the river, sometimes you have the water will cause some of the fleece, some of the wool to come loose, and then you can take that. Or motos, and also when the animals walk among the thorns, the same way some of the wool gets ripped off. So all of those can count as schar amoler mezoino. So fine. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda would agree. When you have an animal that doesn't have any of those things, then you can't do lamechta unless you pay him. But he's saying in these kinds of cases, you have the milk, you have the wool, therefore you have a benefit, and that's the equivalent of schar amoler mezoino. And there's a tanagolus, and he says the same thing. You'd be allowed to with a hen, because a hen actually works for its keep, because it produces eggs, and then it counterbalances that with eating. So therefore, so in all those cases, then you have schar amoler mezoino. But in other words, let's say a rooster, maybe not, because then you don't have, it's not producing any eggs, it's not producing anything useful. So they want to ask the Tanakama, Gizav Achol of Loisipik L'Schar HaMolo Mezoinot. Well, why does the Tanakama disagree with the with Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda? Does he not hold that the wool or the milk would be enough for schar amalei mezonei? So the answer is you're right. The gizav cholav kol amalei tzvi. If the deal was that the shepherd is going to be able to keep all the wool that he shears or that falls off or whatever, and all of the milk, kol amalei tzvi, then you're right. There would be no question. He doesn't have to pay him schar amalei mezonei because that's certainly enough. Ki tzvi benisyuvi the toisvi. The argument is only where the arrangement is, as far as the milk, the shepherd is not going to get all the milk, all he's going to get is the whey from the milk. So we're going to say, we're going to take the milk, we're going to make it into cheese, and then when you're making cheese or butter out of it, then you have left, you have this liquid behind, and that liquid also can be used for various purposes. So now the deal is that the shepherd is going to get to keep that. Or the toastery, or in the case of the wool, all he's going to get is the wool that falls off in the river or when walking between the thorns or whatever. So therefore, so the Tanakhama holds that's not enough. So that's it. Rashi explains that toastery means the wool that falls off. So the Oruch actually gives a different explanation. You have between the legs of an animal, between the legs of a sheep, wool also grows there. But the fact is that wool, when the animal produces waste, when it produces droppings, they're going to get just stuck onto that wool. So therefore, the shepherds would regularly cut off that wool to keep that from happening. And therefore, that part is called toisri. So therefore, Tanakama sovel like Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So the Tanakama holds like Rav Shimon ben Yochai in the earlier Braisa, the Amar Nosel Eschorim Yisholim, where he says you have to pay the shepherd or the storekeeper or whatever a full salary to avoid the problem of ribis. So according to him, giving him just the whey or giving him just the wool that got ripped off or whatever is not enough to be that. Therefore, he holds as a problem of ribis. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda sovel l'kavua. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda holds like his father, like Rabbi Yehuda in the previous braisa. The Omer we said afilu l'tovel ima evel tzir. Even if he only dipped some food into the balabos's sauce, v'le ochal ima l'gregera sacha. So he ate with him only one fig. Zehu schare. That's enough to be considered his schar. So therefore, he says that yes, if you give the shepherd only the whey, or you give him only the wool that got ripped off, or only that little amount of wool that's between the legs, or whatever, then yes, that's enough for it to be considered schar amalei mezonei, and therefore that avoids the issue of ribis. Now he's not doing the work for you because you lent him money, or because you lent him an asset, but rather because he's getting something out of it. Another braisa. So far we have the kama, which is kama who schorei. We had tamig, and we had izi, which was this ein shaman loyse izim. Now comes the third braisa. Tana rabbanan maskeres isha lachavet or tamig golus v'shnei afroshin. A woman. Now this would apply to a man also, obviously, but pashtus back then the women were usually the ones who kept the chickens because they're the ones who are home all day. So a woman can rent out to her friend a hen. Where the pay is going to be two chicks. So for example, so Rachel has a hen, Leah has eggs. Now you can have, for example, she could have bought the eggs from somebody else, she could have had a chicken and it died, whatever it is. So Rachel says to Leah, fine, I'll rent you my chicken to incubate your eggs, and then when the eggs hatch, then you're going to give me two of the chicks as payment. And that's allowed because then again, she tells Leah, you give me the eggs, the eggs will remain by me, I'll take responsibility for them. When the eggs hatch, I'll raise the chicks until they're old enough to give back to you. And then per year, I'm going to get two of the chicks are going to be for me. So therefore, there's no lending over here. It's a rental. She's renting her the chicken, and therefore that's not a problem. So that's fine. On the other hand, isha she'omer l'chaverta, but if she says, let's make a partnership, tanegolas shaliu veitzim shalichi, that I'll provide the hen, you'll provide the eggs, ba'aniva at nachlat be'efroichin, and you and I are going to divide the chicks. Now you have a problem because once you're mentioning division, then it means that it's an iska, and therefore now you have this whole issue of the risk versus the reward. Where again, she's taking responsibility for half the eggs that no matter what happens to them, I'm going to pay off. So therefore, so you're back to the problem that we said that you have half Vilva and half Picardin, and therefore you have the issue of, Ribbis comes into play. So you can't do that. So Rabbi Yehuda Matu, Rabbi Yehuda says it's allowed, as we're going to explain in a second how Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it. Rabbi Shimon Oser, Rabbi Shimon says it's also. So the question is, Rabbi Yehuda, like Boris Schara, Moller, and Mazone, according to Rabbi Yehuda, shouldn't she at least get Schara, Moller, and Mazone? The fact is, we're saying that you and I are going to split things, which implies that that we're doing a full split and we're not taking into consideration the fact that she's putting in the effort to raise the chicks. And the answer is Ika Beitzim Moisris, because inevitably among the eggs you have some of them that are spoiled, not really spoiled, but are not going to they're edible, but they're not going to produce a chick. Nowadays, most eggs we buy in a store, b'chlal, are not fertilized, and they're not going to produce a chick b'chlal. But even among fertilized eggs, inevitably you have some of them that are spoiled to the extent where they're not going to produce a chick. And then if she keeps those and she's allowed to eat those, well, good. So in that case, she's getting some benefit out of it. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be allowed. And Tosfos points out it's common enough that there are such things, so therefore, even if in one particular batch of eggs it turns out there aren't any, then it's not a problem, because ordinarily there are going to be some. And the fact is, you are allowed to eat them. Okay. And then we have a fourth braisa, Tana Rabbanan, Mokum Shenogu Lahalas Scharkata Flamois for Behema, in a place where they have so you have like this, you're doing this shoma golem usyochim that we described in the Mishnah, where you're figuring out the value of a calf or of a baby horse or whatever, and you're going to say you're going to raise it for me, and then eventually we're going to split the profits. So now what we do is sometimes in some places where they do an iska like that, they also the fact is sometimes you have to carry around the animal. When the animal is little, it can't walk on its own legs, and therefore you have to carry it around. So there are places where the minhag is that you give the shepherd, you pay him for that, for the fact that sometimes he's carrying the animal. So in such places, malin, so then you're allowed to, you have to give him that pay, the in mashanin, minigam dinner, don't do any different than people do in that, don't do any different than they do in that place. Rav Shimon Gamliel, I'm a shaman eagle in Imai. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, when you're figuring out this kind of shuma, and you're giving animals to a shepherd to raise, you can figure out the calf together with its mother, or siyachim Imai, or the pony together with its mother, meaning, in other words, that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that if you're giving the shepherd, for example, the mother cow together with her baby, and you're going to raise them together, you're going to keep them together, then you don't have to pay him for carrying the baby, because you don't have to pay, you don't have to carry them. Generally, they're going to follow their mother. And you also don't have to pay him for schara molo mazone, because the mother is able to work and earn her keep. The mother being a mature animal, you're able to do work with her. So therefore, so you wouldn't have to pay him anything. And he says, even in a place where normally they pay the person for carrying the animal, here you wouldn't, because the mother is together with it, and therefore the mother is going to, and therefore the baby will follow its mother, and you don't have to carry it around. So the question is, still, doesn't Rav Gamliel require schara moler mazone? Fine, most of the time you don't need to carry the animal, but sometimes he does need to carry it, so at least you should be paying him for, at least you should be paying him on that basis. And the answer is it's glowing. The fact is, even then, you do have an advantage. You are gaining the fact that you have the waste of the animal. You have the dung of the animal, which you can use as fertilizer or whatever. And therefore, so you are getting some benefit from it. And Rav Shimon Gamliel holds like Rav Yehuda and says that therefore that's good enough. You don't need the owner of the animals doesn't have to give him his pay, because his pay will be the glolin, the fact that he's able to keep this waste. The Ida, where the Tanakhama disagrees, and says, Glolimaf, Purim, Mathbilahu, because to begin with, the owner is Mathbir those. It's not even like he says, I want to keep them, but then I'm going to give them to you. So therefore, in effect, the other guy is getting them from Hefker, and therefore that wouldn't work, and the owner has to give him Skara Mala Umazon. Tosfos points out that earlier in the Masechta we had by Hashava Saveda, we said Glolim Afkori Machkelahu. Therefore, that was according to everybody, because there you have a person is getting this animal back. He doesn't care, fine, so I don't get the Glolim back. But here we're talking about a person wants to get himself out, paying a schar through Glolim. Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that's good enough. The Tanakhama holds that it is not. Tosfos actually brings a different gusa in the Gemara over here, and a number of other Rishonim have a similar girsa, which means that according to their girsa, it's not a matter of that you're paying him for the carrying of you. So it starts out that if it's a place where they usually pay the person for animal, for carrying around the animals, then fine, but also you have the other girsa as Mahalas of Lodis Fuller that you can have, according to the second girsa, rather, we're talking two different cases. Mokum shenagu lahalas schar kata flamois would be nothing to do with animals, meaning there are places where you have payrus already in a field, you have payrus already in a chotzer, and you figure out how much are they currently worth, how much are they currently selling for, and then you add to it schar kata, that the fact is you have to transport these payrus from one place to another. So in such places, you're allowed to do that. And then separately, you have the behema. You have where they make arrangements as far as animals. So according to that girsa, it's not that you have a minute to pay people for carrying around the animals, but rather two different cases: one where you pay the person to carry your payrus, and the other is, or where they figure out in addition to the value of the payrus, the value of the transport of the payrus, and a separate case involving the animals. So within that, Hagoris HaGurah points out you have different, the Rosh versus the Tur have different explanations of who exactly stands to benefit from it, and therefore what the relevance of it is exactly as far as the Dinim of Riddus. So the Gemara finishes off. Amar Rav Nachman, halacha k'Rav Yehuda. The halacha is like Rav Yehuda in the previous piece that we said that you don't even need to pay the storekeeper or whatever an actual salary. It's enough that you have him dip in sauce with you, or you give him one gregaris. So the halacha is like that. The halacha k'Rav Yosi b'Rav Yehuda. The halacha is also like Rav Yosi b'Rav Yehuda, that in the case where you're giving the animals to a shepherd to watch for you, then it's good enough that you're giving him the whey, or that you're giving him the small amount of wool that comes off loose or whatever. That is good enough. The halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. And in the last braisa about carrying around the animals or whatever, the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that where the baby is together with the mother, then you don't need a separate, you don't need to pay him anything separately, because you have the glolim, you have the waste of the animal which he gets to keep. So the halacha is like all of them. This is relevant as far as the dinim of heter iska in particular. One aspect of a heter iska is that you write into the document, remember, where heter iska is you're taking a loan, and you're saying instead of a loan, it's an investment. Part of it is that you write in the document that you're paying the oisik, the one who's running the store or whatever, in this case, the one who's borrowing the money, but you're treating it as an investment, you're paying him a salary. It doesn't need to be a large salary. You can just write in there, I'm paying him a dollar, for example, and that's good enough, and that avoids that aspect of riddus, because now you're paying him a certain amount, and appointed of Yehuda, even tovelim of Betziv, Gergenasachas is enough, and therefore now he's doing, in effect, you're saying that now he's managing the business for the sake of that dollar that you're giving him, rather than for the fact that you lent him money and are setting him up in business. There's more details to a heter iska than that, but that's one of the details that goes into it.